From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana, will be along to look at the cash grain market. We'll talk with Drew Lerner as well. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and I'll remind you of a couple of things. Please do visit our website at willag.org. Look into the calendar and you'll find our all-day agricultural outlook along with many other events. If you haven't picked up your tickets yet for the all-day, do it right now at 217-333-7300. Stay with us for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat for the day finished the March at 735, up 3 cents. The May at 743 and three quarters, up 4 1/4. July wheat at 745 and a quarter, up 4 cents on the afternoon. The hard red in Kansas City, 10.5 cents lower for the day. It finished at $7.99. Corn futures, the March contract, 696 and a quarter unchanged. The May at 693 and a quarter, down 2 1/4. And July corn at 684, down 3 on the afternoon. The September futures at $5.81 and three quarters, up a half. December at 564 and three quarters, a penny and a three quarters higher. That's for the new crop. And the March contract at 574 for next year, up 0.25 cents for the day. Beans finished the March contract at 14.22 1/2, up a penny and three quarters. May futures 14.14, up 4 1/2 cents. July soybeans $14.25, up 4 1/4 cents a bushel. And the September futures at 13.10 3/4, up 2. November at $12.76 1/2 of the new crop, 0.5 cent higher. The January down 3 1/2 at $12.77. Bean meal at 409.20, down 1.10. Bean oil up 62 at 51.72. Live cattle futures finished the April at 129.40, 55 cents lower. April feeders at 144.95, down $2.20. And April lean hogs at $85.80, down 20 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, March contract, $97.04 a barrel, down 47 cents. The Arbobber wholesale price of gasoline at $3.04 1/10 cents. That's 9 1/10 cents lower. Ethanol at $2.36 9/10, a penny and 8 1/10 lower. And the difference between the two is now 67 2/10 cents. That's 8 1/10 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.29 9/10 cents, up 6 9/10. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.21 9/10, a penny and 6 1/10 lower on the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,644.50 an ounce, a settlement price down $4.40, and the U.S. dollar at 80.08 is up 0.01 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly cloudy skies, turning that way anyway, and a high of 46. Sunny skies at the moment with a west wind at 10 to 13 miles an hour. This evening, the clouds will continue, a low of 32. Tomorrow, partly sunny and 47. It will be breezy with west winds at 13 to 22, gusting to 31. And then Thursday evening, scattered flurries, mostly cloudy, and a low of 26. West-northwest winds at 14 to 16 miles an hour. Friday, scattered flurries, mostly cloudy, and a high near 32 degrees on a west-northwest wind at about 16 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 23. On Friday evening, mostly cloudy and a low of 18. Saturday sunny and 26. Saturday evening, cloudy and 17. And Sunday, mostly sunny and 36 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 27. On Washington's birthday, a chance of showers, partly sunny, and a high near 45. Showers likely on Monday night, cloudy with a low of 31. And Tuesday, a chance of rain and snow, mostly cloudy with a high near 35. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Stuart Peterson, right here in Champaign, is Jackie Vakes. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's talk about the marketplace just a bit. There were lots of things in the outside markets that we probably ought to discuss. Sequestration might be the first thing to come up. What did you see?
Well, I think it's extremely important that people, you know, just to make it clear what sequestration is this is what was a part of the 2011 budget, where they said, you know, that if they do not have a budget passed by the end of this month, then these automatic cuts are going to go into place. Now, I think a lot of people, especially, you know, people in our business, maybe don't think that that's as serious, but one of the things that, there's a number of things it affects, okay? We could see a million military people laid off, which increases unemployment, certainly not a great thing for us. But more seriously, they're talking about maybe furloughing all of the agricultural inspectors for up to 15 days. Well, if that happens, here's just a short synopsis of what we're talking about. We're talking about 2,100 fewer food facility inspections going on by the FDA. We're talking about effectively shutting down, perhaps, the meat industry, because by law, unless they have a federal inspector in place, they cannot produce meat, which could lead to higher meat prices and shorter stocks on the shelves, basically affecting about 6,300 establishments nationwide, $10 billion in production losses, and lost wages of over $400 million. So, you know, we're talking about more than 500,000 people from an employment standpoint that could be affected by this, just within the agricultural industry itself. And then if you take it one step further, you're looking at the potential for that March 28th agricultural acreage report not being able to be released on time. And so, you know, there's some very, very far-reaching things going on here. The American Meat Institute is trying to work with the USDA to look for contingencies. In other words, you know, lay off other employees rather than inspectors. I doubt if other employees will be too excited about that, but, you know, they're going to have to try and do everything they can. Now, I did talk to someone who this morning was talking to a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and their opinion was is that we probably will see it happen, you know, that the chances are there. So when you look at the inspectors, let's stop and, you know, some guys might be saying, okay, that affects the meat industry. Well, it also affects the grain industry, remember. All of those barges, all of those boats that leave the United States in any way, shape, or form are inspected by USDA employees. And so this could grind us to a halt for a while.
I suppose that's correct. We did see the inspectors right there at the ZinNow export elevator last summer when we went on the bus trip.
Absolutely. I mean, he had his own office, and he was right there all the time, and they can't ship any grain unless it's been USDA inspected. And so, you know, it's quite a quandary and quite a mess we've gotten ourselves into here.
Let's stay with the livestock sector for just a second. You made note on just a bit you sent me beforehand about cattle and choice and select ratio. So I take it that has to do with the available meat and USDA grading?
Well, it does. It has to do with that, but it also has to do with pricing. When you look at buyers going out into a lot, Todd, basically what they're looking for is that if you're a feedlot operator and you have 75% choice, that other 25% is going to get paid as if it's choice. Now, normally, when we look at a choice-select ratio, we're looking for about a 10-to-1 ratio. In other words, you know, we've got a good amount of choice right there. Well, at this point in time, we're running 4.1-to-1. And what that says to me, as a person who worked in the cattle industry, we've got a lot of green cattle in there. So from a pricing standpoint, I think this week we've seen some real pressure coming on the livestock market because of the sequestration, and also because we have a lot more green cattle. We're just not anticipating having any opportunity for feeding them on any type of a pasture or anything else. And so there's a lot of things going on in the background.
Wait, let me delve into this just a bit, because I'm out of my area of expertise or my feeling. So when you say green cattle, you mean cattle that aren't ready to go to market, or that are ready to go to market but not in condition? Which are the
well,
two?
What I mean by green cattle is that the available stocks basically that are there are not as mature as they should be to have made choice, but there's still the demand there that wants them. But so they're not going to pay you as much for them. They want the cattle. Okay, that's the key. You know, they want the cattle, but they're not going to pay you as much because they're not going to hang as well on the rack. And so it also is, I guess you'd have to say, a statement to how tight our stocks are in the nearby month.
Right. So two things, I guess, that I hear you saying is the cattle aren't as good as maybe we would like them or you would like them coming into the marketplace, pushing the price of cattle down. And on the second thing, the reason that that's happening is because there's not enough grain and or available pasture to finish them out properly, and there are fewer of them around, and that would put pressure on the input side or corn and on the corn market for lack of use.
Well, up to a point, I don't know if I would take it quite that far, but okay. I think what it does is it does make a testament to the last cattle on feed report, and it showed that we had lighter placements in the heavier weight cattle. And so I think what it says is it states that there's good demand for beef, okay, that they're willing to take beef that aren't quite as finished, but they're not going to pay as high a price for it.
Okay. Ethanol plants, we've been talking about them closing, and now they're opening back up.
That's right. We had four ethanol plants announced that they're going to restart, three of those out in Nebraska, one in Rensselaer, Indiana. And that goes right along with the EIA coming out today and saying that we actually saw ethanol output up 1.9% last week. So, you know, I've always questioned this, whether these ethanol plants were actually closing down for retrofitting, if they were closing down because of lack of being able to source corn. Because when you look at the ratio, I heard you give the RBOB and the
spread.
Ethanol ratio, the spread. When I look at the spread, it's at 1.28. That is that should be a very profitable level for them to produce ethanol at. So I think this is a statement to the fact that they couldn't source corn properly, or they were retrofitting one or the other.
Right. So probably out to the west, they weren't able to source corn, and maybe to the east, they might be retrofitting. In fact, we've heard that they were at least a couple of them retrofitting for greater extraction of oil.
Well, yeah, that's exactly true, you know. And when you just look at the big picture, you know, even just driving around town, you can see the difference between E85 and the cost of a gallon of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly certainly good demand there for that.
European
markets, interesting markets. They have really been the sellers overnight lately. The European funds have been just coming in and they're selling. Then some of the managed funds got onto the bandwagon. Some of that has been, I mentioned this morning, attributed to less threatening weather and probably bigger crop expectations. We all know that that's a long ways away. But this afternoon, they actually announced, Barclays announced here in the U.S. that they're going to close down their agricultural long-only fund. That would be an index fund. And BMT, which was out of Brazil, is closing their agricultural fund, and they're doing it because they're being heavily pressured with people saying, you know, that this type of trading is causing food prices to go up too much. Just goes to show you how very few people really understand what causes food prices to change. But, you know, our general government attitude is that. And so I think we're starting to see some of that fallout. The bottom line, Todd, is that if you're a producer and you're still sitting on old crop corn, you have to be prepared. If we don't take care of this government issue we've got going on right now, sequestration before the end of the month, we could see some really severe cuts in the price. Even though it's not really justified, it could happen. So I think you have to take a step back and you look at it. On the other hand, and you might have heard me say this on Dave's show this morning, I talked to one of my guys from Nebraska today. He's very close to a huge facility that normally has 3 million bushels of corn on hand at this time of the year. They're down to 500,000. And so, you know, they are very, very afraid as far as what's going to happen as we go further down the line. So we have a lot of different conflicting things going on here, but I think that the bottom line is the producer and the end user have to recognize all of these things impact the price that they receive.
Hey, one final note. Did I see you on Orion's This Week in Agribusiness over the weekend?
Well, you did.
Congratulations.
Really did. Well, thank you.
Congratulations.
It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I've gotten tremendous feedback from clients and other people. In fact, even somebody I used to work with in my other life at the feed mill contacted me because he had seen me there too. Orion is an absolute gentleman. He did his very best to make me feel comfortable.
He always does.
You know, yes, he does. And after he told me there were no retakes, that was a little tougher. But I have to thank you guys because my experience of doing live radio shows really helped me out a lot.
Well, you're so welcome. And guess what? Orion will be with us at the Farm Progress Show this summer, I know, at 10:30 in the morning, all 3 days at the University of Illinois tent. So,
wow.
More
that's
of
awesome.
Orion coming
awesome.
Up. All
yeah,
right.
That's really wonderful. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, and have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
That's Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois, to take up the agricultural futures markets on this Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Well, your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here in a moment with today's agricultural news. In the meantime, dial this number, 217-333-7300 for your tickets to our All-Dag Outlook. It's over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 5th. Dial now at 217-333-7300. Tickets are just $25.
In agricultural news, the European Union and the United States announced today that they have agreed to pursue talks aimed at achieving an overarching transatlantic free trade deal. The 27-country EU says such an agreement would be the biggest bilateral trade deal ever negotiated and could boost the EU's economic output by 0.5%. A highly desirable outcome when the EU and the U.S. are struggling with slow growth, high unemployment, and high levels of debt. The goal would be to remove import tariffs, which average 4%, and reduce the approval processes that businesses have to go through in order to sell products on both sides of the Atlantic. Initial talks should start by summer and cover a huge array of commercial and agricultural areas. The USDA Undersecretary for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services says USDA is still studying the impact of possible sequestration cuts on farm programs. One element that gives USDA pause is that the across-the-board cuts take effect on March 1st, but USDA's sign-up period for the direct and countercyclical payment programs begins February 19th. Under the sequestration, agencies are expected to honor legal agreements, such as Conservation Reserve Program contracts, that could be interpreted to include a producer's current enrollment in farm programs as well. Deere & Company says its first quarter net income leapt 22% as it sold more farm machines for higher prices. Deere says it earned $649.7 million in the quarter ending January 31st, or $1.65 per share. Revenue rose almost 10% to $7.42 billion. The Moline, Illinois company predicted that sales would rise about 4% in the second quarter and 6% for the full year. It expects 2013 net income of about $3.3 billion. The Commerce Department today says that Americans barely spent more last month at retail businesses and restaurants. After higher taxes cut their paychecks, retail sales ticked up 0.1% last month after a 0.5% rise in December. January's increase was the smallest in 3 months. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program you can find along with all of our agricultural programming on our website at willag.org. Our panelists this week for Commodity Week include Kurt Kimmel, Brian Stark, and Chuck Shelby. Steve Erdman will be our guest from EFG Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Commodity Week, it's our look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. One other note about our website at willag.org. It will change on Thursday during the day, so you might have a little problem getting to the website as it's moved from one site to the other. It should be a great site. We hope you love it as much as we do at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Now it's the 13th day of February, a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line to look at the cash grain market is Patrick Kaufman. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Patrick.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Have you been able to source corn on a regular basis for the ethanol plant?
Yes, and you know the interesting thing over the last couple of days has been the basis improvement here in the central Indiana to west and northwest Indiana. You know, strategically, I think as we look forward into the planting season, our producer corn typically slows down. So, you know, getting full prior to that time frame is been kind of important to us and strategically, and it has kind of elevated the whole basis market in the central Indiana to western Indiana in the corn especially.
Right, in the old crop in the spot month, and what how far over are you, or what are the bids like at this point? What's the basis?
Well, the bid integrity. we are posted at 42 over the May. We've gone to the May. The market has elevated really from a 30 to 40 over in the last day or two.
Okay, so you're pretty long ways over. And then everybody else in the region is in the same way, in the same boat, I suppose, trying to fill the bins before farmers hit the planters.
Yes. The interesting note, the feed industry here locally was leading the market up to about 3 weeks ago. They have fallen out of the market. Now, they were driving the bus, if you will. Yeah. 3 weeks ago, they stopped. They've been below the marketplace, 10, 15 cents, and they have not yet come back in. And my anticipation is that they will here, I would say, the second week of March to mid-March, and they'll be the driver again.
Yeah, they didn't liquidate. They're just waiting to fill back up, I suppose.
Yeah. And thus far, they've been correct.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so tell me about the soybean basis then.
Soybean basis has been actually the quite opposite. We were, you know, a few weeks ago, we were pushing the 35s to 40s at Claypool and Frankfort and Cargill Lafayette. They've backed away. I think it's just because of the movement. You know, we had that burst above $15 cash. We had a lot move. You know, South America weather was still good. We had an opportunity to sell $15 beans. And I think we had a large movement for the month of February and first part of March. So basis cooled off a little bit. But we're starting to see it stabilize and kind of turn back around.
Just your spot month bids, please.
Corn at Climbers, we are at 735, right. And Delphi, we are, what are we at here, 15, so we are 38, 1438.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Pat Kaufman is with the Andersons at Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana.
It's National Tortini Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1822, Jeremiah Bailey received a U.S. patent for the first practical grass mowing machine. It was horse-drawn, and the movement of one of its wheels turned gears to spin a vertical shaft with cutting blades. The machine could mow up to 10 acres a day, and it was featured in Mechanics Magazine in 1823. In 1851, George Brown Good was born. He was the editor of the Fisheries and Fisheries Industries of the United States, while deputy commissioner of the U.S. Commission of Fish and Fisheries. The study attempted to catalog the state of the American fisheries at the time. It described a significant part of the marine environment, with 532 etchings of marine mammals, fish, and shellfish, and it also illustrated fishing vessels, gear, methods, and processing. In 1910, William Shockley was born, an English-American engineer and teacher. He was a co-developer of the transistor, which ushered in the age of microelectronics. And in 1933, the House of Commons defeated a bill that would have prohibited the sale of alcohol in the United Kingdom. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check the weather forecast. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is on the phone line. Drew, why don't you take us through the forecast here in our part of the world? It's sunshiny at the moment, but I guess that's going to fade away fairly quickly.
Well, you know, it's that time of the year. We've got a little bit of disturbance coming into the area from the northwest. This is one of those infamous little Alberta clippers that's going to be pushing its way across the upper Midwest the rest of this afternoon. We have seen snow and breezy conditions already develop across the portions of the Dakotas and Minnesota. As we go through the next 24 hours, this will race right on into the heart of the Midwest, and we'll likely see most of the snow, though, confined to the northern portions of the region. This would include Minnesota, Wisconsin, parts of Michigan, and northern Illinois and parts of Iowa. Will get certainly a little bit of snowfall from this, but it's not going to accumulate in a significant manner. The wind will likely pick up as the cold air comes into the region. This will be mostly an event that occurs tomorrow. And we'll look at the wind speeds, maybe sustained at 15 to 25 miles per hour, and maybe some gusts getting up close to maybe 30 miles per hour in a couple of spots in the western Corn Belt in particular. Eventually, we'll get the winds in the eastern areas as well, but that'll be more tomorrow night into Friday. It'll be cold. That's the main thing. Temperatures are going to be turning a lot colder across the region, and we'll likely see sub-zero readings again in the upper parts of the region, while most of the heart of the eastern Midwest and the central areas, too, for that matter, will probably see low temperatures bottom out in the positive single-digit readings and teens as we move into the weekend, maybe Friday morning in the northwest, but in the heart of the region, probably Saturday, and maybe Sunday morning we'll see lows mostly in the teens and some 20s.
Well, it's a little bit cold, but by the time we get to Monday, we start to warm up, at least in our part of the world.
That's right. That's right. It's that time of year we do swing that pendulum back and forth, and that's what makes it all so interesting, I guess. But we will be seeing the temperatures in the afternoons early next week, getting back into the 40s and 50s across a fair amount of the lower parts of the Midwest. Still a little nippy in the north, though.
Your assessment of South America at the moment?
Well, you know, it still looks very good. I've tried to make everyone aware of the fact that no matter how you try to ruin the crop in Brazil, there's no way we're going to do that. It was pretty wet there for a while, but it just wasn't wet enough. The farmers there, like here in the Midwest, are extremely efficient in their field work, and they have managed to keep up with the harvesting even while it was raining. The forecast is now for a lot less rain, so the field work will actually become a lot more aggressive in the heart of the production region. And those areas that were trending a little dry in the far southwest are going to get timely rainfall, so it's still a very large crop coming out of Brazil. And, of course, Argentina still is struggling with dryness, and they've lost some yield potential this year. They're going to continue struggling for a while longer.
All right. Anything else to add across the planet that we need to check in on before I let you go?
Well, I think the main thing is hard red winter wheat country. You know, it's been very dry there, along with the western Corn Belt, for an extended period of time. As we move forward into March, I think we'll start seeing better rainfall potential in both areas. a fix-all to the drought is probably not going to occur, but at least a step in the right direction.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and wraps us up on this Wednesday afternoon for the Closing Market Report. You have a great day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.